In our year-by-year roundups, we have crawled our way into 1995. This is the year of the Simpsons episode where they went to Australia. Fun fact, this week we look at a bunch of bands that Bart might have heard on the radio when he was here. Welcome to Just Ace, a podcast about the 90s Australian alternative music scene, whatever the hell that means. This week we look at a few bands who made an impact in 1995. They are Custard, Skunk Hour, Big Heavy Stuff, and Drop City. Triple J going national meant that Brisbane bands didn't have to move to Sydney straight away. You can stay in Brisbane and tour Australia and play to fans back home and still get a few festivals and do fine. I mean, we will get to Powderfinger and we won't really get to Savage Garden, but they are two of the biggest bands from Brisbane and they stayed in Brisbane and did fine. That was unheard of before the 90s. One of the first bands of the era to get massive success from Brisbane was Custard. They started with David McCormack on guitar and Paul Madu on bass. Both had been members of a band called Who's Gerald, who had a track on Ruart's first Youngblood compilation. They picked up big, curly-haired Matt Strong on guitar, and a succession of drummers, starting with Shane Broome. Many of the members had been playing around in a close-knit scene in Brisbane. They formed lots of bands and was part of a larger circle of mates that included the Melnicks. They loved the Go-Betweens and Jonathan Richmond and made guitar pop with fun lyrics. They often mentioned Brisbane in their songs. Their first self-released music was 1990 with the single Rockfish Anna. Here's Rockfish Anna by Custard. They followed it up in 1992 with a self-released album called Buttercup, after they got a few hundred dollars for a band prize. But they soon came to the attention of labels, as a lot of bands did in the early 90s. They were picked up by Rah Records, the new indie arm of Ruart, who also had UMI. That original album was quickly buried, and it's still kind of hard to find. They released a series of EPs for Rah, because in the early 90s, EPs is what you did. One of the EPs was called Brisbane and was later collected on a compilation called Brisbane 1990-1993. They picked up airplay on Triple J, newly national and eager to support bands outside of Sydney and Melbourne. New drummer Danny Plant joined around this time. The band made a debut album released in 1994 called Wahootie Fandango. It was produced by Simon Holmes of the Hummingbirds and Wayne Connolly of the Welcome Mat. Because it was the 90s, it's 15 tracks and full of ideas. It didn't sound like a grunge record, but had plenty of great pop rock mixed with Custard's fun worldview. It comes together best for me on the single Pack Your Suitcases. Sweet and weird, with just enough guitar crunch to remind you they were still a cracking rock band. From their debut album, Wahootie Fandango, here's Custard with Pack Your Suitcases. The album wasn't a big hit, but by now the band worked out who they were. In Dave McCormack, you had one of Australia's most charismatic indie frontmen. He was tall, weird-looking but handsome, hilarious and charming, and you could never quite work him out, so many people were drawn to him. Matt Strong was a legs-apart, big-haired guitar hero who possibly wondered why he wasn't in a metal band, but it made Custard different from a lot of the other indie bands. Paul Madu's funky bass lines kept the whole thing danceable and fun. Every member contributed. 1995 saw the release of their breakthrough album, Weisenheimer. Rah had a tendency to send their bands to work with hot international producers. For Custard, they chose Eric Drew Feldman, who had produced Pixies frontman Frank Black's solo albums. They flew to San Francisco and spent months on the album. Weisenheimer had the same sideways worldview and slightly off-kilter songs as their debut. But here the guitars were turned up. It was Custard's heaviest record, which was great because the mid-90s called and asked for more guitars. The big smash hit was Apartment. It made number 7 in the Triple J Hottest 100 of 1995, the highest Australian entry. Here's Apartment by Custard. I'm going to say this about 95% of the albums from here on in till the end of the 90s, but Weisenheimer was too long. But particularly for a band like Custard, who are full of ideas. But the album is full of so many incredible highs, like the latest single, Lucky Star. It was another great slice of crunchy guitars and Custard's quirky pop smarts. Here's Custard with Lucky Star. What happened next was Australian band career by numbers. Custard hit the road on the back of a hit. They played Crowded House's giant Farewell to the World concert. They also toured the States with the Presidents of the United States and Red Cross. These were the good times. But the world was changing. Custard were big in the Triple J world, but Weisenheimer, the album, didn't break the top 50, and Apartment, the single, didn't chart at all. Whereas in 1995, UMI had a number one album, Tumbleweed and Tism had top 10 albums, and Silverchair were ruling the Western world. Even Grumpy Pants' Nick Cave was having top 10 albums. They were the biggest band in the Triple J world, but it was time to make some money. Basically, expectations changed. Glenn Thompson, another friend from Brisbane who had known the band since the beginning, came on board as drummer after Weisenheimer. He was also a songwriter and contributed a couple of important songs to Custard's next album, 1997's We Have the Technology. It was recorded in Memphis whilst the band was on tour, again with Eric Drew Feldman. First single, Nice Bird, was fun and featured the band in powder blue suits in the film clip. For me, the second single, Anatomically Correct, is one of Custard's best. It made number 48 in the Triple J Hottest 100 of 1997, their best placing for that year. Here's Anatomically Correct by Custard. I have noticed that all the little cells gather round her and they bring my We Have the Technology was more pop and varied than Weisenheimer. The guitars were not as heavy, and there was more room for pop and even ballads. It also had 18 tracks, if you include the hidden track. One of the highlights was Pinball Les, with its fantastic riff and sugary backing vocals. Here's Pinball Les by Custard. Pinball Les is shacked up with Nan's girlfriend, reconditioning pinballs. He bums them out again. Things aren't so great. One of the oddest moments of Custard's career came when the band went on Hey Hey It's Saturday. The primetime Australian variety show was huge, with its mix of light entertainment and mega guests and weird puppets. The show was very middle of the road and mainstream, but they also had music. Hey Hey was kind of the wrong side of the culture wars at the time. Some bands actually had it in their contract that they didn't have to do anything with Hey Hey It's Saturday. But expectations were changed and Custard appeared in 1997 to perform their latest single, Music is Crap. The song was one of Glenn Thompson's, who moved to the front when it was performed live. Dave McCormack usually switched to drums, but for some reason, Hey Hey host Daryl Summers was put on drums. McCormack, one of the most charismatic frontmen of the era, sat on keyboards and was barely seen when the performance aired. Music is Crap went on to be the first Custard single to chart at number 73, so I guess it kind of worked. Still, it's a great fun song. Here's Music is Crap by Custard.
Red eyes, blue gaze, you look like hell today. Step out on parade, you do it so well. Your favorite shirt, those shoes that you bought at Perth. Dumb hair, smart slacks, that's rock apparel. Music is crap, aliens told us so. Better than that, we're gonna let you know. Just listen.
What do you do with a band like Custard? Because as the mid-90s turned to the late 90s, it wasn't enough to be big on Triple J. Custard's initial contract was for 4 albums, and they were fast approaching album number 4. Also by now, their label, Ra, had been bought out by major label BMG. And when a label gets bought out, usually you dump the bands that aren't working and you keep the stars. But Custard was granted one last chance to prove themselves. What they needed was a hit. The band furiously wrote lots of songs for their label to consider. Sounding like a guitar-driven Triple J indie band wasn't an option, so they worked with Magoo, the Brisbane producer who had worked with Regurgitator, and helped that band find keyboards and groove with their hit album Unit. Recorded in Brisbane, Custard made 1999's Loverama. It was a big, shiny, modern-sounding record. The first single, released in 1998, was the magnificent Girls Like That Don't Go For Guys Like Us. Here's Girls Like That, open parentheses, Don't Go For Guys Like Us, closed parentheses, by Custard.
Girls like that. Girls like that don't go for guys like us. I wanna see the facts. And she says simply no. The Hooli of Iglesias. He just ain't scientific. I'll keep on looking for that love and feeling. I'll keep on looking for that love and feeling. All of the chemists and witch doctors, they know, but I'll never ever know. Guitar.
Girls Like That was a big hit in the Triple J world. They had fans who loved them and voted the song to number 3 in the Hottest 100 of 98. But it failed to crack the ARIA Top 50, which in retrospect is amazing. But the simple fact was, commercial radio didn't care for Custard, and in the late 90s, it was still the best way to promote your songs to big audiences. A second single was released before the album. It was called Hit Song, and it was pretty much a barbed attack on the pressure on them to write a hit song. McCormack took the things that people said to him about writing songs and put it together, with more than a little bitterness. Desperate for a commercial hit, the record company released 4 versions of the CD single, splitting up an image of Dave across 4 covers. The hope was that hardcore fans would buy 4 copies, artificially inflating the charts. It didn't work. The song did less well than Girls Like That. Commercial radio didn't touch it, but as art, it's incredible. That bitter song about writing a hit single that was released to be a hit single. It's irony in 3D. But also, my heart breaks hearing it. There's so much anger in it. Here's Hit Song by Custard.
All my life,
It wasn't all external pressure on the band. There was internal pressure as well. They had spent a decade together, and they weren't young men anymore, happy to live in each other's pockets. Three of the members decided to leave Brisbane, and they all moved to Sydney, but separately. Another highlight from Lovarama is the new Matthew. There's no such thing as a direct lyric in Custard's world, but the feel of the song is about life changing and friends changing. And there's an obvious candidate for the Matthew in the title of the song, being guitarist Matt Strong. There's sadness and defiance and acceptance, plus that tinge of country. It's a wonderful song, and it's the best thing on Lovarama. The film clip was shot in a house in one take with a cardboard cutout of Matthew. Shaky and sometimes out of focus, the video ironically highlighted their ARIA Award win for Best Video, something they won for Girls Like That. The band look utterly defeated in the film clip. Here's The New Matthew by Custard.
From what I hear, we are lucky, we're surrounded, and we definitely are alone in a corner of the galaxy. It's the Milky Way, and from here I can spy on and observe the place where I was definitely born.
Why didn't Lovarama work? I don't know. I think you also have to ask why We Have the Technology or Weisenheimer didn't work either. I could argue that they were just too quirky for the masses. But it's not like Regurgitator or Spiderbait were singing traditional and relatable love songs. If anything, all the girls I knew loved Custard. They were actually one of the more romantic of the big bands of the era. The songs were so fun and arresting that surely something like Girls Like That or Apartment or Alone should have cut through. The real answer, and something we will dig into more as the next two seasons unfold, is there's no good reason. It was just someone at Triple M decided Powderfinger yes, Custard no. Custard barely made it out of the 90s. In early 2000, the band broke up, 6 months after Lovarama. They didn't even do a big farewell tour and get some big shows in and make some money before it was over. It was just over. They were all exhausted. Custard were one of the first big bands in the 90s to break up. Less than a year after Lovarama and a couple of months after they broke up, the label released a greatest hits compilation with no promotion. A contractually obligated release, I imagine. Just something they can sell for cheap and make some money back. No new tracks or anything. It had the very bitter title, Goodbye Cruel World. Dave McCormack continued on. He formed a band called The Titanics. Glenn Thompson joined along with McCormack's new wife, Emma Tom. Tom was a writer and columnist, and to put it overly simply, she was super cool. I liked them as a couple. They ultimately broke up, but they were the coolest indie celebrity pairing for a while. The Titanics released two self-released albums in 2 years that got some Triple J play, but it didn't make much of an impact. Better for me was the couple of albums he made with a backing band called The Polaroids. They were breakup albums after his marriage with Tom was over. It was more direct than anything he'd ever done. But it was still weird and wild. It was only 3 years after Custard broke up. The Polaroids also featured Dylan McCormack, Dave's brother. It was weird when you first saw them because you'd go, who's that guy who looks so much like Dave? Anyway, here's a David McCormack and the Polaroids song, one that got a fair bit of airplay. It's called The Inner West, and it's very dear to my heart.
Well, I haven't been over this side of town.
Then, sort of out of nowhere, in 2015, Custard released a new album. They had done the odd reunion show, and that was kind of what bands did at that level. But new music was unexpected. With no outside producers to tell them what to do and no label crying for a hit song, the album sounds like a bunch of guys having fun. It had another very dry title. It was called Come Back, All Is Forgiven. After that, they managed to find a way to keep going and have actually released two more albums after that and another one to come. It's not full-time, high-pressure, gotta-write-a-hit life of the band in their 20s. It's more gentlemanly than that. Here's one of my favourite of their recent singles. Here's Funky Again by Custard.
The Russian winter is moving in, and your face is making me stone blind.
Of course, Dave McCormack did manage to have a hit. It just wasn't a song. In 2018, McCormack said yes to doing a couple of lines for the voice of an animated dog. It was for a very independent kids' short series made in Brisbane. The episodes were like 6 minutes long, and they just needed a few lines for the canine dad. Just a pilot, not much of an ask. McCormack simply recorded the lines. He didn't act, he didn't bounce off anyone, he didn't put on a voice, he just said the words and sent it on. The show, called Bluey, is now an international sensation. McCormack is a superstar to those under eight. He even got to go and sit on the sofa with Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show. I wonder if he slipped music fan Fallon or the band The Roots a Custard CD. If he did, I hope it was that contractual obligation best of called Goodbye Cruel World. I really like or love all the albums, but as a singles band, that run of radio songs in the 90s are invincible. You have to hear them all. Maybe if I had to choose, We Have the Technology is my favourite. But some days it's Wahooty Fandango. But then there's Weisenheimer. Look, I can't choose and I don't want to. They are all great in my book. I also love the sweetness of Custard. In an era when people sang about Berlin chairs and buying ponies, Custard often wrote about silly and sweet love songs, which appealed to me. I also think that Dave, who loved bands like the Go-Betweens, his instinct was romantic pop. But Matt's rock guitar and Paul's bass kept things interesting. It's kind of surprising that looking back at the stats, for a great singles band, they had no top 50 hits, and Loverama only made number 19 in the albums. But in the Triple J world, they ruled. Two massive smashes in the Triple J world of Apartment and Girls Like That made the Hottest 100 top 10 in their respective years. Who knows why it didn't work, but they were one of the best bands in the 90s. As we are in the 1995 episode, I'll end with another song from Weisenheimer. Not a single, not anything but a great pop rocker that I love. He's Custard with the Venus Flytrap versus the Lightning Bug. Skunk Hour didn't sound like the other bands from the Australian alternative scene. They were a breath of fresh air who managed to break into the Triple J crowd on their own terms. And they dared to use the F word, funk. Skunk Hour were formed in Sydney around two sets of brothers. Dean and Michael Sutherland on bass and drums, along with Aya and Del Larkin on vocals and rapping. Warwick Scott filled out the lineup with tasteful, slithery guitar. In any other era, Skunk Hour would have been thoughtful adult contemporary and probably playing to a lot of boring people. But two things set them apart from a lot of other funk bands. First was their social consciousness, which was in their songs and moved them towards a younger, more Triple J crowd. And the other was Aya Larkin's incredible voice and stage presence. Add to that his distinctive bald head, he was unforgettable. This wasn't music to just tap your toes to, This was physical music. They self-released an album in 1993 and then made two EPs for a major-funded indie label, Id Records. But the mix of what made Skunk Hour special was in their breakthrough song, 1995's Up to Our Necks in It. By now they were on Sony's Epic label, not some cool indie. Maybe they didn't think they were a Triple J type band, but by the mid-90s, Triple J was playing so much new Australian music that Skunk Hour was worth a go. Here's Skunk Hour with Up to Our Necks in It. Del Larkin rapping, Aya Larkin singing.
Prettier than that butterfly, I'll watch you head off through this night sky. The thought of you lingers like the smoke that's drifting from my fingers. While I sit, I see there's a tree outside my room. My face reflected in the pain of this moon. Outside, the cold rain cleanses my soul. Hold the distance between the rooms of my thoughts of a soul. Sitting in that room, sometimes I get to thinking to myself, love, where does it come from? For days on end, I would plead to the moon, where can I find someone to strip my flesh back bare to where the word begins? Strip my flesh back bare to the wind that violates my skin.
Washing away under the sun, vanishing the street heat, melting on tall, lost in a wave of cutthroat urban values, looking for some.
Up to Our Necks in It made it to number 55 in the Triple J Hottest 100 of 1995. Feed, the album, hung around the ARIA Top 50 for 14 weeks, peaking at number 21. The album was released in the UK and the band toured Europe. But then Del left the band. He got married and he lost his passion for being in a band and wanted to do other things. Skunk Hour continued on. Del was impossible to replace, so the band worked out how to sound without a rapper, with Aya being the sole frontman. And with the new Triple J audience they found, they also believed they could experiment a little. Skunk Hour Mark II's first album was 1997's Chin Chin. The big single was Weightlessness. It made it to number 93 in the Hottest 100. Here's Weightlessness. Without Del, the songs became more melodic and more about catchy hooks. Weightlessness is a great example of their new mix. Chin Chin made it to number 34 on the album's chart. Weightlessness just cracked the chart over in singles at 97. In the early 90s, labels were taking bets on local bands because the chances of finding a silver chair were small, but the rewards were big. But by the late 90s, those bands needed to make money, and yes, there was pressure on even Skunk Hour to break commercial radio and have a big hit. It didn't happen with Chin Chin, and Sony dropped the band. And the band almost broke up, but they decided to record a few more songs to see where it would go. They released an independent single called Home in 1999, which made it to number 82 in the Hottest 100. Universal decided to sign the band, and it looked like they were all set for another go-around. But then Universal was going through its own restructure, and the band lost the label's support. They released one album on Universal, 2001's The Go, but with no support from the label, it didn't crack the ARIA Top 50. 6 months after it came out, the band had broken up. Here's Skunk Hour with Home.
Two sisters waiting in the garden silent. A couple sitting on the stair. A family eating from a takeout menu. A TV set next to a chair. Boy in the kitchen with the radio on. His mother singing in
I have so many good memories of seeing Skunk Hour. They were captivating live and they got on a lot of bills I happened to be at. I remember seeing them at a winter sleepout, a fundraiser where teenagers camped out on the Opera House. They played a lot and just won people over show by show. The band were always solid and they cut their teeth live, but Aya Larkin gave them that extra special star power. It's not just his voice. He cut a striking figure with his bald head that was just as much a marketing point as Elvis Costello's glasses. There was a compilation called The Essential Skunk Hour, and it's just the back of Aya's head. That's all you needed. You could recognize the band by the back of the lead singer's head. They didn't have the luck, especially in the end. But they made great music, got to tour internationally, and found an audience who loved them. They were also different from all the other Triple J bands. But they connected with that audience because they shared some of the elements that we teenage music fans loved. They had that incredible energy, and they seemed to be talking about our lives. So it made sense that the band would get back together and do what they did best, which was to play live. To fill your night with some great music. Which they started to do in 2009 and have continued pretty much ever since. Del Larkin rejoined the band and they play music from all eras of their career. 15 years on, the reunion isn't a fad and they found a new live audience without anyone's help. There's been mumbles of new music, but nothing has been released yet. Another big song for them was their first single for the Chin Chin album. It was called Breathing Through My Eyes and it's one of my favourites. Just that title always stuck with me. Here's Skunk Hour with Breathing Through My Eyes, first released in 1997. Sydney's big heavy stuff drifted from label to label, but they made some of the best music of the 90s with their intense, moody indie rock. The band was fronted by Greg Atkinson, who had been in the band Ups and Downs with his brother Darren on drums. Ups and Downs had a minor hit with The Living Kind in 1986. Here's The Living Kind by Ups and Downs. They broke up in 1990 to become Big Heavy Stuff and play heavier rock. They were joined by guitarist Carolyn Polly, who played in other bands and did lights for Ups and Downs, and then bassist Darren Jones. They started their career on the label Volition, which was Australia's premier dance label, but also had a few indie rock signings. One was Ups and Downs, and the new band just carried on over from that deal. Volition was backed by Sony in these years and hedging their bets with a bit of indie rock. Falling Joys were also on the label. A string of EPs and a debut album in 1993 called Truck didn't really give them any success. By 1995, they had a new bass player in Elliot Fish and a new drummer in Nick Kennedy, who was also in Knievel. This lineup would finally be the right mix, it would turn out. The first release from this lineup was the 1995 EP Covered in Bruises. It featured the song Birthday, a minor Triple J hit and a wonderful song. And the reason they're in this 1995 episode, because I love it, is Birthday by Big Heavy Stuff. They signed to Shock's Hypnotized label for their next album. 1997's Maximum Sincere had a string of Triple J singles. They really embraced the harder rock and abrasive elements, and they created a fiery, nasty album. The album was self-produced by the band in Sydney. From Maximum Sincere, here's Big Mouth.
What gave that away? What gave that away? Which Big Mouth, the one that told you? What did he have to say? Necessary big plans, none include you.
The band scored the much-coveted support for Radiohead on their Australian tour supporting OK Computer. They were playing to some of their biggest audiences, but it always seemed like they weren't one of the big bands of the time. They didn't do a million interviews and they didn't make themselves the story. Maybe they lacked star power, but Greg was very captivating as a frontman. I think they just didn't care about most of the music game outside of making music. I think people were looking at the follow-up to Maximum Sincere to be the big one. Maybe there'd be a couple of big rock hits, which the band was certainly capable of. Instead, they released an album called Size of the Ocean. It wasn't a rock album. When I first heard the album, it wasn't what I expected. The loud guitars were stripped back and an acoustic guitar dominated proceedings. But the same intensity remained, but it was now brought into sharp focus with a layer of noise removed. The most energetic songs like Two Sisters were released as singles, but otherwise it was a slower, more downbeat album of fractured beauty. Here's Hibernate, the opening track from Big Heavy Stuff's Size of the Ocean. Hibernate made it to number 77 in the Hottest 100 of 2001.
No more bad guy in this picture. He just made his great escape. He took all night to write this letter. Myth of epic size. You could baptize.
The album was released on Redline, a new label set up by Jebediah and their manager Heath Bradby. Love Is Fiction Records made a great reissue of Size of the Ocean just a couple of years ago. Sadly, the band only released one more album and broke up in 2010. Their sole 90s album with their classic lineup, Maximum Sincere, remains a favourite. They have been re-releasing all the material and Maximum Sincere on vinyl would be most welcome. Here's another killer song from it. This is Big Heavy Stuff with May.
I should have known better. should have known better.
Finally, I want to highlight Sydney's Drop City. They were a band signed to Red Eye Records. The band was led by Matthew Tao and they made epic psychedelic guitar rock. They weren't like the other straight rock three pieces who were around at the time. Drop City had more in common with the British shoegazer movement than Nirvana Grunge. They were signed to Red Eye, who was funded by the major label Polydor. Their second album, 1995's Magic Transistor Radio, is a psych rock classic. It still sounds incredible today, and I think the band worked really hard on making that be true. They actually recorded it in London with Andy Wilkinson, who worked on albums by My Bloody Valentine, Moose, and the Boo Radleys. The dreamy quality was matched by the dreamy lyrics. Here's the song Apple Tree from that 1995 album, Magic Transistor Radio. They played the Big Day Out in 1996 and were set for big things. They seemed most likely to follow in the footsteps of The Cruel Sea and Clouds as the next big band on Red Eye. Unfortunately, priorities for the label changed and John Foy, the head of Red Eye, split in 1996. That left Drop City on a deal with people who didn't get what they did. One more major label album, This Heavenly Machine, followed in 1997. But without label support and their music far from commercial, they left Polydor shortly after. They released a couple of independent albums after that, but faded from view. Here's a song from This Heavenly Machine, it's Fools Rush In by Drop City. Tao went on to form the Love Tones in 2002, furthering his big melody psych rock. That band toured with the Brian Jonestown Massacre, who asked Matt to join their band in 2003 as a guitarist and occasional songwriter. Here's a song that Matt wrote with Anton Newcomb of the Brian Jonestown Massacre. It ended up on their 2003 album, And This Is Our Music. It's called A New Low in Getting High, and it features Ed Harcourt, Matt Tao, and Anton Newcomb all on vocals. after a few years, he returned to Australia. The Lovetones seem to be Matt's main outlet now, and they still release new music. 1995's Magic Transistor Radio is wonderful. It's a great slice of where the 90s could have gone in Australia if we followed a more British path. Drop City would often be the support for British bands like the Manic Street Preachers and Stone Roses. Plus, it's one of my favourite album covers of the 90s. It would look great on vinyl, rights holders. From that album, 1995's Magic Transistor Radio, here's the first single, Setting Sun, by Drop City. And finally, a look at the Australian Alternative Year-End Charts for 1995. It's not just music that was alternative. These were charts compiled by the Australian Music Report that got sales from indie and alternative stores. Over in singles, the top four were all Australian. Magic Dirt's Fantastic Life Was Better EP was at number one. Numbers 2 and 4 are the first two EPs by Regurgitator, self-titled and new, respectively. Number 3 is Junior by Pollyanna. And their Lemon Suck single is also on the list. Silverchair have two big singles on there, led by Pure Massacre. And You and I also have two, with Kathy's Clown the higher one. And in terms of new bands, there were a few, like Big Heavy Stuff and punk band Body Jar, make the list. The highest selling Australian alternative album of 1995 is Machiavelli and the Four Seasons by Tism. You and I's Hi-Fi Way is second, and three was Spiderbait with the unfinished Spanish Scallion of Findlay Lake. The rest of the list are bands I've covered, like The Cruel Sea, Dave Graney, Tumbleweed and Silverchair. They were the biggest bands of that year. The full list will be on the website. And some music to end. Look, I'm not sure I've talked about UMI enough. I didn't include this song on the UMI episode, but here's a big fat blast of 1995 for you. This is the 18th highest selling Australian alternative single of the year. It's UMI with Jewels and Bullets.
Everyone, they sling you, hit like you folks have never.
Thanks for listening to this episode and welcome to the end bit. This is where I talk about the different ways to support the podcast. There's various costs and so much time involved in making the podcast, and being able to devote some real time to it is only something I can do with your support. One of the easiest ways is a tipping service called Buy Me a Coffee. It's just a way for you to leave me a tip. No subscriptions or anything. And I absolutely drink those coffees. Lots of people have bought me coffees and that's unbelievable. So thank you, and links to Buy Me a Coffee is in the description. And Buy Me a Coffee is just one of a couple of ways that you can support me. There's the Patreon, of course, and there's the new book, the Just Ace book, which is adapted from the first two seasons of the podcast so far. You can also buy other merchandise and t-shirts and tote bags. There's also important no-cost ways to support me as well, like leaving me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, leaving me a 5-star review on Amazon if you buy a book, and you can share the podcast on your socials, or simply tell a friend. I appreciate your time as well. All the links that you need are in the description. There's also links to the website and socials where you can find out more, and there's music playlists and notes from every episode. That's it. Next week, the fight to make something authentic reaches our TVs.
Hi, this is John from Fove's Other Best People. We review each and every song from legendary Australian rock group, The Fove's. From misguided modelling career to dogs are the best people. From celebrate the failure to Simon Tahiti. Are you a fan of the Foves? Give Foves are the best people a spin. Available from wherever you get your podcasts and at fovespodcast.com.